This is Toledo Symphony Lab, a behind-the-scenes look at the world of classical music from WGTE Public Media and your Toledo Symphony. I'm Brad Cresswell, and joining me in the studio today are the Toledo Symphony's president and CEO, Zach Vassar. We also have the TSO marketing director, Vanessa Gardner, and a very special guest. Even though he's been with us on the phone all season, he's actually here live in the studio. Welcome, music director Alain Trudel, doing a little dance to your Walk on Music there.
Hello.
So great to have you here in the studio. This is the music that I was hoping would presage your entry into the Paris style when you returned for that concert with John Nakamatsu, but alas, you had something else in mind. Well, a great entrance, though.
He was wearing bell-bottoms.
You were wearing bell-bottoms, yes, as you walked into the beat. Well, we're going to take up the slack here with Symphony Lab and bring back your disco walk-on music, or chair dancing music, however you want to characterize it. Alain, let's start with you. How's it feel to be back in Toledo?
Amazing. It was to see, of course, all my colleagues, my musical family in Toledo. So it's like my other family. I missed you guys so much. And then to arrive at the concert and have the public there, we had a lot of people. It was fun. It was like, wow, everybody socially distanced, mask and everything. But, you know, it was really, really special to see everybody. And the welcome I had was, I will never forget it.
Yeah, we should say that this was the concert with John Nakamatsu performing Chopin. And they had a little video of you sort of driving up and jumping out of the car on your bell bottoms and going onto the stage and to great applause. Yeah. It was a wonderful experience. I was there in the house, but this is a one of those concerts that folks can still dial up and watch right now. You can, you know, you're done listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Listen to this first. And
in
then
about 30 minutes you can watch it.
And then rush on over to stream.artstoledo.com. You can watch that concert, the triumphant return of our music director, Alain Trudel. Vanessa, you've been on the job since, what, last October, something like that?
Yep.
And you had never met Alain face-to-face.
That's right.
How was that first meeting?
He's shorter than I thought.
I don't think that's true. We all thought
he
was short.
Said about you.
I think she's amazing.
Yeah. No, we had a great first meeting. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of laughing.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of laughing here
the
podcast as well. So, little reminiscing.
Yes.
We're here to talk about a concert that is upcoming. It's really the final concert of the season, but this will be available again, like the Nakamatsu concert, for a while. It's stream.artstoledo.com, and folks can check it out. They can watch it. They can go live in person if they want. If you're listening to us on air, you can still get your tickets for this concert. It's happening this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, 8 o'clock p.m. at the Paris Style, Beethoven's Pastoral. Do you say pastoral or pastoral? How do you say it in French, Alain?
Pastoral.
Pastoral.
Yeah,
okay.
I always say pastoral.
I've always said pastoral.
This is the announcer's dilemma,
right? I've always said Beethoven 6th.
There you go. Very good. We'll go with Beethoven 6th. But Beethoven 6th is harder to say than Beethoven's Pastoral or Pastoral. Anyway, that's the title of the concert because that Symphony No. 6 is on the program along with music by George Antheil, who is an American composer. We're going to hear his Serenade for Strings, which dates from the late 1940s. A beautiful piece of music. Let's talk a little bit about the music on this concert. And I want to go for George Antheil first because this is a composer that not many people may be familiar with. Do you know, well, I mean, his most famous work is the mechanical ballet or the ballet mécanique. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Which uses, I mean, the original version used 16-player pianos, two regular pianos, xylophones, electric bells, three propellers, a siren, four bass drums, and a tam-tam. You're not doing that one this weekend,
no,
right?
No. Not even the kitchen sink.
Not even the kitchen sink.
It's just a nice piece for string orchestra.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that piece for string orchestra a little bit. And you know, I mean, who...
It's going to sound boring by comparison. I mean, without any sirens, yes. Just strings. Are they prepared strings? No, they're just strings.
Yeah, well, can I say, though, I mean, he was a little too ambitious, probably, for that first orchestration of the piece because he had to go back and redo it. You know, he couldn't get 16 player pianos to play everything at the same time the way he wanted them to.
And then when they didn't, he said, oh, I like that better.
Yeah, exactly. So the point being, we're kind of setting up George Anthela as, you know, a modernist composer, but this piece for string orchestra fits squarely into that kind of, you know, Americana mold, very listenable, very beautiful. Elaine, do you want to talk a little bit about that particular piece?
Absolutely. Well, I cannot talk about the piece without talking about the program a little bit, because the idea is to celebrate... I want to celebrate our orchestra also. So the program doesn't have any soloists. It's two orchestral pieces. Like the serenade is like a mini symphony a little bit. Yeah. And then Beethoven's Pastoral. But in this piece, what's interesting about Anthel is that he would go back and forth between, you know, a modernist essay and then something more conventional. And so it's not a question of like chronologically trying either when he was very young to do things that are very modern and then settling down, or you wouldn't know from one piece to the other. And it was a time where actually, you know, we can make a parallel, because, you know, after 1917, after the war, after the Spanish flu, and when they got back in the 20s, everybody was trying all kinds of things, and wow. And so he's from that era. He's a little bit like from that time, but from our time as well. So I thought it'd be nice to have somebody that we can not associate with, because people don't know him all that well, but it's a way to know another American composer. And as you know, I like to program lots of American music on our programs, but not just the new music and not just the very well-known ones, but the ones that we have a tendency to forget sometimes.
Yeah.
And he's definitely a composer that's worth seeking out and having that. So if you want to do an introduction to Anthel, this is a perfect piece. Mm. It's a little bit you know, it's American, but at the same time, sounds a little bit like Shostakovich at some point. It has this big energy, but also it's like Shostakovich, but with an American groove to it. That's what's really interesting about that piece.
I have to say, I mean, I've never heard of any concert that paired Beethoven with Anthel. The programming, you know, that you guys have come up with during this past season. First of all, you've had a season, right? Mm-hmm. And we're quickly coming to, you know, the final concert of the season. That's something that not a lot of orchestras have been able to do, the fact that you've been able to continue making the music. And then on top of that, coming up with programs that are really inventive and really interesting, right? So not only would you not hear this kind of programming pretty much anywhere else. You wouldn't even hear a season almost anywhere else. So I think that you guys are to be absolutely commended for that.
Yay!
Do you know this story about George Anthel and Hedy Lamarr that they invented? They were like inventors. They worked together. You know the story, Zach?
Yeah. I mean, she basically came up with the idea for Wi-Fi, you know, a long time before computers were invented. But, you know, they had a original copyright with the patent office, I think, and they shared the copyright together, right?
Yeah. It's just amazing that, you know, here's this person who was a composer, and here is this actress. Mm-hmm. And together they invented this incredible thing that has had such a huge impact on our daily lives. This idea of, I guess it's called spread spectrum, which is used in telecommunications and everything. It's the idea of sending little packets of information, right? instead of a steady stream of information. And that sped everything up. So you could have computers, you know, talking to each other very quickly.
Very useful during the war, too, in communication as well. Yeah. So if anybody has your WGTE passport, I'd recommend watching the American Experience about Hedy Lamarr, because it was fascinating on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if anybody pulls out their cell phone during the concert, they can thank, you know, George Antheil in there when they applaud the concert. Let's talk about Beethoven. You've chosen the Symphony Number 6, his pastoral or pastoral symphony, which is all about nature, one of the earliest examples of, like, program music. You know, he gave titles to each of the movements.
Five movements.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, the Beethoven 250 year. Yeah. I mean, everybody was planning to do a lot of Beethoven. Mm-hmm. You guys have maintained some Beethoven throughout the programming this year, but you're kind of giving the last word to Beethoven and his pastoral symphony. Elaine, you talked about Antheil and how he fits into this program. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Beethoven. Let me bring up some Beethoven for you. This is from the scene by the brook, which comes from the Symphony Number 6. Okay, take it away, Elaine.
Okay. So, of course, you had mentioned that we had a lot of Beethoven. Like, at the beginning of our season was a Beethoven festival. We had 8 symphonies in a weekend. And we wanted to have a little bit of a tribute to that, you know, to what we had planned, and to have bookends of the season with Beethoven. But more importantly than that, is I was looking for a piece that would a little bit summarize everything we've been through as a community, as a society. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially those last two movements of the symphony. You know, you have the storm, and then it's interesting because, you know, the last movement when they say Shepherd's Song, cheerful and thankful, feeling after the storm. I think it's like, you know, we're seeing, I wouldn't, maybe not the end of the storm, but, you know, we can be hopeful now. We can see through, we can see forward. And there's a sense of gratitude, a really big sense of gratitude towards everybody that supported us all the way. And, you know, because we don't, if we play for ourselves, for us, it's not so motivating. But playing for an audience, playing for our patrons, playing for the audience on Tapa, like sharing this at this time where there's such uncertainties, and going through that and people sticking together and doing that, I think this was the perfect piece to, you know, this scene by the brook, you know, it's like, it's like we went through all of this together. Now we harvest everything that we've put in. So, and together with our public and together with all of you.
Zach, what are your thoughts on this, bringing the season to a close with Beethoven and the way that Elaine has talked about the thunderstorm and finally the, you know, the pastoral shepherd song?
I love the imagery of the calm after the storm. And, you know, as Elaine said, we're not quite there yet, but we can see the light on the horizon. And, you know, this year has taught us a lot. It's taught us to prioritize things maybe differently than we had. It's certainly encouraged a lot of people to get outside. You think about some of the statistics that Matt Killam shared with us from the Metro Parks on the show a few weeks back. Having a kind of a back to the roots nature contemplation to end this season, I think, is meaningful on a couple of different levels. But the gratitude that Elaine mentions is really focal, I think, on all sides of the stage, from the stage, from the audience, from the administration, from the board. And, you know, if there's a finer note to gallop into the summer on, I can't think of one.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Vanessa, you mentioned you have a Symphony Number 6 story.
Yes, I just heard that horn solo in the background.
Mm-hmm. See, I meant it to play out that way.
I bet you did. So a couple years ago, many, many years ago, there were major floods on the New England coast, and it was right in the middle of a Beethoven 6 cycle. And I was playing first horn, and our rehearsals were cut short, and I was very young. I was like fresh out of school or maybe still in school. And I was so nervous, and I played the the horn solo in the scherzo, and I blacked out in the middle of the scherzo, in the middle of the solo.
You checked out.
Like, no, I almost fell off my chair.
Wow.
I was so nervous. Whoa. So it was... and it was just one of those most terrifying moments. And I will never, ever, ever forget that experience. Thank goodness it was in a rehearsal. And then I took a lot of beta blockers and the concert was great. Oh, but I just love this. I love this symphony so much. Yeah, it takes so much control and it's... Oh, yeah. It just takes you away.
It takes control. It takes pacing. Yes. I feel like it's an endurance run. It's not a sprint.
And, absolutely.
You know, I of course heard it for the first time on Fantasia. You know, those little sprites running around in nature, and the crack of the thunderstorm. Yeah, I remember terrifying me. But if you go back and listen to that as a 5-year-old kid, that's a ton of music to listen to. It's and Stokowski doesn't make cuts. He doesn't speed it up. It's but it tells a story and it serves such a wonderful meal.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that we can't discount the genius behind the entire concept of the symphony itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, Beethoven, as we know, was very fond of nature. Mm-hmm. He drew inspiration from his walks in the woods, you know, outside of Vienna. And the fact that he crafted this symphony as an almost direct portrayal of those very, very personal experiences. And he gave titles that we've been talking about to each of the movements. I mean, it's really a testament not only to the incredible, beautiful music, but also to Beethoven's genius, you know, and the whole canon of Western classical music.
I think also to finish our season, it feels like when you, especially when you hear that last moment, it's not finishing with a high five, it's finishing with a big hug.
Yeah.
That's what we're all missing, right? So it's like a musical hug to everybody.
Yeah, we definitely look forward to that. Well, I have a pastoral pop quiz, or a pastoral pop quiz that I wanted to run past you guys. This is pretty simple. Some of the questions are a little bit esoteric.
Your tests are never simple.
Yeah.
Or esoteric.
Yeah. It's not a test.
I want to tell the two of you. I was walking out of the Peristyle with Brad a couple of weeks ago, and he admitted to me that he actually makes up all the questions on the spot, and that he's been using the same two pieces of paper in front of him all year long.
I didn't think you were listening at that moment. Yes. Well, I'm about to make up a few questions here.
Okay. I'll make up a few answers.
I make up the answers, though. I don't make up the questions. No, I do make up the questions. Now I'm confused.
I want to go back, now that we've done, you know, 150 episodes or whatever it is, I want to go back and just do a whole retrospective of your best quiz questions.
Yeah, we'll save that for
the
next year.
The ones that I have won.
That'll be a very short...
That's a very short...
Short segment. Okay, we're going to spend the next 10 seconds with
Vanessa's
quizzes.
Victories.
Excellent. Let me write that down. That's a good title.
There's show, there's the Alain, Vanessa, and Zach show, and there's the Merwin show, Volume 1.
Totally. Okay, here we go.
I think Michael Lang has a
show. Yeah, right. Bill Edens, too.
All right, so let me pull up some music here. I've got some good music. Yeah, this is very... kind of a little English-sounding, but it has a nice little vibe to it. Okay. Question number one. This composer liked to go hiking, and one of his works has a direct connection to the Swiss Alps. Is it Richard Wagner, Richard Strauss, or Richard Rogers?
Strauss.
Wow. Remember, this
and
can be...
And it is my favorite piece of music.
Oh, no. It's all of the above. It's all of the above. It's absolutely all of the above.
Whatever.
It is all of the above.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rogers, of course, has a little Alpine song of his own.
Yeah, and next it time on quizzes that Vanessa has not won. Okay, now
stay tuned.
Tune in, everybody.
Richard
next
Strauss.
Week, yeah.
Yes, Richard Strauss wrote the Alpine Symphony, right?
Greatest.
Based on a true story, when he was hiking in the Alps, he got caught in a thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Wagner liked to hike through the mountains and the glaciers, and
not to get caught.
Yeah, he hiked very quickly.
It's the getaway mountain.
For some reason, I've got Lullaby Mountain song in my head, but yeah, Getaway Mountain.
Hushabye Mountain.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. That's, what is that? That's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, good job.
One of my favorite movies.
You get 1 point for that one.
Yeah, and Richard Rodgers, of course, wrote The Sound of Music.
They climbed every mountain.
And they climbed the Swiss Alps. So all of the above. Okay, we spent about 10 minutes on that first question.
Our pen is working, Zach.
we're in good shape.
Well,
we're
out of time. Thanks for joining
us today. We're filibustering the quiz.
Okay, I see we're back in fine form. All right.
If you start quoting Green Eggs and Ham, I'll know that we're onto something.
Now, next question. Like Richard Strauss's Alpine Symphony, Beethoven's Pastorale has a thunderstorm. Which of the following pieces does not portray a thunderstorm? Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Rossini's William Tell, or Berlioz's The Trojans, Les Troyens. Which do you say? Which of them does not have a thunderstorm?
I think William Tell.
It has to be Berlioz.
Next time on Quizzes.
None of the above.
Very good.
Oh.
You actually win that one. That's amazing.
First, she got it wrong. With this odd,
yes.
Thereby eliminating one answer.
I was buying myself some time.
It's the old Tom Brady double pass.
But that's how I do everything in life. First, I get it wrong, and then...
I think I'm onto something. The answers are either going to be all of the above or none of the above, or A, N, C.
It depends on what I make up for an answer. Okay. This one's a little more difficult. Tchaikovsky wrote an overture called The Storm for an unfinished opera. What was the opera and the overture inspired by? Was it a 17th century English play? Was it a 19th century Russian play? Or was it an ancient Greek play?
Oh. None of the above.
Hey. Two letters left, guys.
What were the nationalities?
B or C, a 19th century Russian play
or
an ancient Greek play?
I go for Russia.
All right, Zach. You got that. It was The Storm by Alexander Ostrovsky, right? Not that anybody would know that.
Oh, sure.
Okay, speaking of Alexander Ostrovsky, as we often do.
The best bar segue I've ever heard.
Yes. The same play by Ostrovsky inspired another composer to write an opera. Who was the composer? Was it Antonín Dvořák? Was it Bedřich Smetana? Or was it Leoš Janáček? This one's a hard one.
Can I use my Merwin lifeline?
No.
Janáček.
Wow. Very good one. Katya Kabanova is based on The Storm.
Natch.
Okay.
Speaking of Ostrovsky. Yeah.
Speaking of Katya Kabanova.
It sounds like a fake name. I'm sorry. It's like a
It's a spy name.
No, Ostrovsky sounds like a Irish, German, Polish name made up on the spot.
Okay. Very good. We'll see how many of those we can come up with. All right. Now, by all accounts, this composer had an angelic singing voice, and they sang from the age of 5. When their voice changed, however, they were described as sounding like a crow by their country's ruler and was kicked out of choir. Who was it? Was it Giacomo Puccini? Was it Joseph Haydn? Or was it Gabriel Fauré?
It's Haydn.
Yes, that was an easy one. Yeah.
He was hiding his voice after that one.
Empress Maria Theresa heard him and said he sounded like a crow. So
but
they had
nice
to kick
crow.
Him out.
But a nice crow.
Yeah. Some crows sound actually very nice.
He was not eating crow.
Yes, okay. This composer wrote music inspired by the American West to celebrate the nation's bicentennial. Was it Olivier Messiaen? Was it Aaron Copland? Or was it Manuel de Falla?
Messiaen.
Very good. For some reason, I knew you would get that one.
Yeah.
From the canyons to the stars, right?
What was your little bell there? That's like a...
That's your Mahler bell, sorry. I hit the wrong
Mahler
button.
Bell.
The Mahler bell, yes. Hmm. We're going to work that into one of his symphonies.
So, Ma bell.
Manuel de Falla was already dead. He died in the 1940s. And it wasn't Aaron Copland, but Messiaen, yeah, he was inspired by the canyons of Utah, actually. Okay. Messiaen was also famously inspired by bird song for his music. Now, Beethoven used the cuckoo in his pastoral symphony, and many composers have used the cuckoo's distinct two-note call. We hear that in cartoons all the time as well. Which of these composers also imitated a cuckoo in their music? Was it Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov? Was it Peter Warlock? Or was it Gabriel Fauré?
Fauré.
No, although actually Spotify would have you believe otherwise, because if you Google cuckoo and Fauré, some Spotify track comes up, which is spurious.
Spurious.
Yes, I actually did a little research there. So was it Rimsky or Warlock?
Warlock.
I think it's Rimsky-Korsakov.
Very good. Very good.
I feel like in Fauré's Sicilian, there's a little cuckoo-ness going on, but maybe not.
Is the person who wrote the words.
Yeah. No, it was Rimsky and his opera, The Snow Maiden. Peter Warlock did a robin, but not a cuckoo.
Ah, okay. And but it was based on Ostrowski.
Yes, it was, indeed. Okay, another Rimsky... Wait, we need our music back. Let me bring that back. There we go. Another Rimsky opera had the famous Flight of the Bumblebee, also, yes. We know that. Mm-hmm. Who else wrote a bee-inspired work? Was it Justin Desprez? Was it Modest Mussorgsky? Or was it Frédéric Chopin?
Ooh. Well, maybe Justin Desprez.
All of the above?
Nice try,
that
though.
That was a good idea.
No, but because Justin Desprez wrote about all these different things of nature. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not.
He wrote the cricket, El Grillo, which, you know, the voices imitate the sound of the cricket.
Yeah. So I gotta choose between Chopin and who?
Mussorgsky.
Sheesh. Mussorgsky.
Chopin.
Vanessa was ready.
Well, I just heard the other day that the Minute Waltz is based on a barking dog or something, whatever you made up in a quiz a couple weeks ago.
Yes, so the puppy dog waltz.
You were just on a theme there.
Yes, indeed. Well, the Etude number 25, or Opus 25 number 2, is subtitled The Bees by Frédéric Chopin.
Oh, wow.
And the next one is called The Knees.
The Bees and the Knees. Okay. Wow, we're almost done with this. Okay.
You sound so depressed.
I know. I've got an extra credit question here, speaking of piano. What pianist said music criticism should be to musicians what ornithology is to birds? This is a tweet from 2011. Was it Yuja Wang? Was it Yundi? Or was it Long Long? Totally random question, I know.
Okay.
Yuja Wang.
Wow.
And plus every other musician that ever lived.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that quote has been used elsewhere, you know, to describe that sentiment. But Yuja Wang. Okay, let me count it up here. Zach has 2. Vanessa has 3. Elaine has 4. So the winner of our quiz is Elaine.
See, if you were here more often, you might win these things.
Good job, guys.
Aww.
You get to hear it from the other side now. That, of course, we have to explain it every time we play it. That is Elaine's daughter over the phone, right? I've got her on my soundboard now for forever, for what it's worth. It's sort of like taking pictures when they're young and they get embarrassed when they grow up. Yeah. So I'll always have this for you.
I can't wait to have her on the podcast in the studio.
Yeah.
Her agent will be in touch.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, let's mention again the concert is happening this weekend. It is Friday and Saturday night, 8:00 at the Peristyle. If you are listening to the on-air version, you can go watch it in person. You can also stream it live on Saturday at 8:00. That can be found at stream.artstoledo.com.
Well, you know, Brad, before we go, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody for seeing us through this year, for sharing their applause, their encouragement, for watching online, for coming in person, for listening to this podcast, and for making this a year that we'll never forget. I mean, we've learned a lot this year, and I appreciate everybody here at WGTE and you, Brad, for being part of our COVID story. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Well, it's been great to be a part of it and to see that what you guys have been able to do this season. A great big thanks, as you said, to our listening audience, to your viewing audience, to everybody who participated in making the season a reality. This program is a production of WGTE Public Media in collaboration with our sponsor, the Toledo Symphony, with generous support from the Rita Barber Kern Foundation. You can download episodes of this program as a podcast by going to our website at wgte.org/lab. You can also subscribe to us through your podcast app of choice, including Apple and Google Podcasts. And remember, you can stay connected with the Symphony through their various social media outlets on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can find those streaming concerts online at stream.artstoledo.com. My thanks to Zach Vassar, Vanessa Gardner, and especially Elaine Trudell for joining us here in the studio. I'm Brad Cresswell. This has been Toledo Symphony Lab from FM 91.